This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Grip Lock, Foundation Disc Golf's weekly podcast. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Trevor and Connor.
Hey!
We got an exciting show today. Some more off-season movement. Simon did what Simon does, and he made a week where I was going to be like, oh no, what am I going to talk about? And he gave me a bunch of stuff to talk about.
Heck,
so that's
yeah.
Fun.
What up, big Simon?
Another update to the fandom survey over from UltiWorld, and then we're going to wrap it out with a little In the Bag segment. But first, I want to actually just give a shout out to you all. We got our Spotify for Podcasters Wrapped.
That
was very fun to look through.
Come on. Heck
yeah, and dude. for 10,400 of you on Spotify, we were part of your top 10 podcasts.
Wow.
For 7,800 of you, we were part of your top 5 podcasts.
Ooh.
Dope.
But for a select 1,500 of you, we were your number one podcast last year.
Dude, if you're one of those 1,500 people right now, we are sending you $16,000 each.
I don't know why you keep promising money like that.
You know how whenever like your top artist will like record like a little message for you saying like, hey, I just wanted to
say. Yeah, wait, why didn't we get an email to do that?
We'll do it right now.
Oh, this is our message. Okay. What's up, Jabron? Here's 16 grand on the house.
Again, not real.
It's just 16 grand worth of betting credits at Grip Locked Sportsbook.
Not real.
Website either. Nobody's won on that.
Jerry's just going to get himself into trouble one day because he's going to promise someone $2 million.
There was like, an offer and acceptance.
Here's Hunter's debit card. I got it from his car.
My car got broken into over the weekend. My debit and credit cards got stolen. It was rough. Oh,
dang, man. Dude. You got to hate when they take the Debbie.
What day was that?
What kind of spite move was that?
I was going out of town. I was at Sam's on Saturday.
I would have caught the guy.
I was going out of town. I went for a run, got back to my car. Called Amex because they had flagged a charge for fraud. And I just assumed my card number got stolen. And then they were like, yeah, it was actually used at the checkout counter. Are you sure it wasn't you? I was like, use it at the checkout counter. Yeah, it wasn't me. I was like, where did I leave my Amex? I was like, they're like, can you read us the number of the car? I'm like, yeah. And then I grabbed my wallet. I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't have any of my cards. The thief was nice enough to leave my wallet, my ID, and my insurance cards.
That is like incredibly nice.
So it's very courteous.
Not having to lose your ID and not having to go to DMV. If you wouldn't take the Debbie, you would.
It was just the debit card because the credit cards probably have been like, you know what? Like, it's unfortunate. It can take me a week, but like, I won't see
debit cards.
It could be up to 90 days before I see my.
In reality, why would they take your ID? Just to quickly just grab the whole wallet.
Yeah, grab the whole wallet.
It is pretty thoughtful. They weren't trying to hurt you. They were trying to help themselves.
Yeah. They were trying not to have me not call the police.
Probably. They're bad people.
Yeah, I called the police.
I think they need to be.
Well, I don't want someone else to go for a run at Blackwater Creek Trail and have their car broken.
Yeah,
they went. They stole from me.
What do you say?
They broke into my car and stole from me. I called the police.
If I were the judge, I would say.
Well, because I also have to now pay to get my car door fixed.
Dude, Hunter, you're such
a jerk. Yeah, that part sucks.
Because I have to decide. Like, I think I looked it up, and it seems to be between like $200 to $300. And so I'm like, do I call insurance about it? Probably not. Because, like, the last time, I know there's, like, this uninsured motorist thing. My insurance still went up when someone threw a brick through my window.
Yeah, I wouldn't
Because they're like, well, you clearly go to sketchy areas of town. I was at a disc golf course.
It was a rock hunter, not a brick.
You're right.
Yeah, stop being dramatic.
That's why. It was a rock. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I wouldn't even talk
that
to
time, no one even stole anything.
At this point,
they just chucked a freaking rock through my window
you
and
have
left.
Really bad luck.
Two incidents in like a year. If you tell your insurance man,
that's what I'm saying.
They're going to charge you a crazy premium.
I'm going to be paying like I'm driving a Ferrari and just driving my normal Mazda around.
Lives in a war zone.
That's why they call it the Maserati.
If I were the judge, life without parole, that's what he'd be getting. And I think the rule should be. I think the rule should be.
Okay.
That. When they catch him, believe in the system. When they catch him and confiscate the stolen items, you should get whatever he stole or whatever, well, he bought. Whatever he bought with your good hard-earned money, you should get your money back and what was taken.
But then Sam's is getting stolen from.
Yeah, but like Sam's.
What does Sam's get?
Sam's, they should have done a better job identifying that you weren't the person with their membership card.
They didn't take my Sam's membership card. I thought they did it first. That's
they
in my
didn't
wife's wallet.
It?
That's in my wife's wallet.
They
may
card?
Have a Sam's membership card.
That's
maybe,
even crazier.
Maybe they stole it from someone else before.
That's
I don't
even
know.
Crazier.
Because I was like, oh, they took my Sam's card too.
So now,
but no, I have my Sam's card in
so
my
now
wife's
all
wallet.
All they have
I
to do
it.
Is cross-reference a purchase on your card with whoever membership card. It wasn't yours, and there you have it.
That's a good point.
Well, just the big question
guys,
is, will the police act fast
yeah,
enough?
Yeah, I'd say if you're the police, like
they have a smoking gun, which is
I
the
think
Sam's
gonna,
Club.
I think
footage.
We're gonna have to
it's
take this
tapping.
Into our own hands.
I'm kind of
yeah,
feeling vigilante.
I called Sam's. On I called Sam's. I was like, is there any way I can get you to go ahead and pull the footage? I can give you like the exact amount and everything just so that you still have it when the police show up because they're not going to show up in time. And they're like, mm-hmm. No, we can't do that for you. I was like, dang
that's
it.
So
dang.
Frustrating, dude. If this doesn't get solved, man, I'm so mad.
Yeah,
I will solve it.
We're going to have to.
What do you think they bought?
What do they call it whenever
TVs,
you
right?
What do they call
this
it whenever
isn't the
you
banter.
Do it
we
like off script?
Well, this is important though.
This is important to us. It has to do with disc golf because yeah. It happened to
Let,
one of the greatest
I bet
leaders.
He bought some disc
it happened
golf
to
baskets.
One of the greatest leaders in disc golf.
He probably bought some. Yeah. He probably bought some disc golf baskets.
What disc golfer would be most likely to break
in
your
that's
car?
That's actually the in the bag. That's actually the in the bag segment. What did
I've got
they
my
use my? What did they use my card with? At Sam's to buy disc golf things only. Go,
dude. He must have had a disc doctor kit to get in there, man.
Come on,
yeah.
Nail clippers.
That's the other thing is I have a 2023 Mazda. Okay, so modern technology.
Screwdriver.
How can someone still
time.
Just shove a screwdriver into the side
I'm
of your not, door and get in?
I literally, we watched Gabby and
Brute
I watched this show.
Wins.
Like,
and
how is that
the
possible?
The stupidest things happen. They like grab a like a flathead screwdriver and shove it into a door of a car and open it. And I always
because
am
they're
like,
not picking it. Though.
I'm always
they're
like,
breaking.
Oh my gosh! Like how do they expect me to believe that you can just stick a screwdriver in a door? Turns out you can.
Yeah, I was like,
I'm gonna have to apologize to my wife.
I got back to my car and I was pissed off at myself because I was like, I did something different. I normally lock with my remote. This time I locked using the door. And I was like, it must not have locked my car, is what I was thinking. And I was like, so I was so upset at myself because I'm like, I let this happen. I just left my car unlocked. So then right before we left for we were going out of town for the weekend, right before we left, I walked over to my car. I was like, I have to see this for myself. And so I pushed the lock button and I watched all the doors were locked. And I went and pulled on all of them like, they're locked. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how did they get in? So then I was like looking to see if they like, you know, use the like thing to go down, like did they damage my car at all? And then about that time, I'm like, no. And so then I look at the key on the side and there's just a big old hole in it. And I was like, there it is.
It's still out there like that?
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm going to have to check that out.
Because the door still locks. So I still lock it. You still can't get in.
So like he didn't break. That is the thing. He didn't break the mechanism. He forced
it
open.
I can't use a key now because it's just a big old hole.
So he did break
the mechanism.
So he broke it, but it still locks. But now.
I could probably use a flathead screwdriver and just go in there.
Because the rest of the locks are.
Just get a flathead screwdriver.
Yeah, I could probably just.
The rest of the locks are electronic locks. He just broke the key lock.
Yeah.
Hit him with it.
That's crazy.
So, also, what the frick, Mazda? Yeah. How's that still able to happen?
Yeah, this is kind of hot seat Mazda.
If I would have had one of those,
let's
like,
go steal from them.
Yeah, you know what? Let's go steal all the Maseratis. All right, Patreon question
at
of the week.
Not
Frisbee?
Break into Brody's car.
That's true. This one comes from patreon.com/foundationdiscgolf, where we have a weekly podcast called the Hydra Club Mailbag that was going on while someone was stealing all my stuff at Sam's Club because I wasn't there. I was running.
It could have been.
I should have been on the mailbag. That's the real moral of this. Had I been on the mailbag, my stuff wouldn't have
been. Is this happening at that time?
Yeah. Because I needed to get my run in before I went out of town. So I left the warehouse and went to get my run in while y'all were doing the mailbag. Maybe it was one of the Patreon members. Maybe they knew I was going to be on it, and they broke into my car out of spite.
Yeah, it's probably Bryce Allen.
That's too far.
Probably. Anyway, so that's we have a weekly podcast over there, Q&A podcast called the Hydra Club Mailbag, and this is the question of the week that I wanted to answer I didn't get a chance to that I thought would be fun. Which, you know, I kind of already told the story, I guess. I have another story. This is from Kent Bontrager. He said, what is the funniest / craziest situation you've ever had while at a course with a non-disc golfer that happened to be there?
Can't.
What's y'all's answer? I didn't get to hear y'all's answers.
About it, we basically are saying, like, I didn't really have a particular story, but like usually the craziest thing that happens, and that's kind of funny and also frustrating, is when somebody is like in a hammock, like right, or like picnicking right next to a basket, and then they look at you like kind of funny, and you're like, you see what you're next
to. They look
at
you like you're the inconvenience.
Repeat the question again. I want to hear what it specifically was.
The funniest slash craziest situation you've had while at a course with a non-disc golfer that happened to be there.
Okay. I was hearing it as like, there's like, you're taking someone to play that's a non-disc golfer.
No.
Sometimes I've also had the scenario where it's like some lady or somebody walking their dog will like walk up to you and be like, oh, you like doing this disc golf thing? And they'll ask you a few generic questions like, what's this disc golf thing? And then they'll proceed to keep walking right down the middle of the fairway you're about to throw after you just explained like what's happening.
The Enos is a big one.
Eno, yeah.
You always see Enos.
PCU Park next to hole one is a very famous spot.
I don't know that I've ever... I see people at that bench a lot of times up a hole one, but I don't know if I ever caught a lot of Enos.
Yeah, they'll be like 30 feet left of the basket where it's just enough of the short basket where it's just enough away that you're like, I shouldn't hit them, but you're still like, but I could.
Or whenever we were shooting at that at the worst disc golf course in the U.S.
Yeah, that lady was just, walking all over the fairway. And what was she doing?
I think that she might have like had amnesia, woke up, didn't know where she was.
She was looking around.
I think she was tripping on something. She like walked up like she was gonna ask Connor and I something because like
and
where
she
I was
just, like stood there
and she stood there for a few seconds and we said like, hey, how's it going? She's like, good, and then just like walked by into the woods.
I think she was like caught up in her thoughts or something. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what was going on.
I don't know. It's fascinating. Mine. So I have kind of two. One is when someone threw a rock through my window.
Yeah,
at a disc golf course.
All sports disc golf.
That was fun. The second one was when I was in college. I was at Camp Hideaway, which is infamous for no one ever being out there.
Yeah.
Ever. Anyone.
Yeah.
And I finished up my round. Well, I'd thrown a jump putt on hole 20, which is the last hole of the course. And out of nowhere, a German Shepherd ran around the corner and picked up my McPro. Was it not?
No, it was like a pit mix.
Okay, yeah, it was a pit mix.
Not to be dog racist, but it was kind of like a
picked
pit mix.
Picked up my Galactic McPro AVR and just used it as a chew toy for about 2 minutes until the owner got a hold of it and then took it out of the dog's mouth and gave it back. He's like, here you go. So sorry about that. I was like, oh, it's no problem. And
yeah,
he walked away. I just looked down and like...
Hunter had to do one of those famous like, oh no, it's okay, man. And like you could just hear the pain in his voice. We were all watching it.
Yeah, he just walked away. I was like, well, I don't have a putter anymore.
And those putters were like $20 a piece. Which back then was even more shocking.
Yeah, that was huge back then.
Nowadays it's just like, oh, stock putter.
So funny, sick. Dude.
Back then it was
I forgot about that.
I can say one of the craziest things that I've ever seen on a disc golf course that was created. It's just a crazy story. Can I just
tell it? Yeah.
All right. You guys have heard this story, but I've never told it on Grip Locked. But me and a group of friends, including my girlfriend at the time, who is now my wife, we drove to Winthrop, which is just like 45 minutes away from Charlotte, where I'm from. So it's not that crazy of a drive or anything. So every once in a while, we would go for like a day trip up there and go play Winthrop Gold. And this time I brought Gabby with me and she didn't play disc golf at all at the time. Now she plays every once in a while, but at the time she didn't play at all. So I gave her like I had a misprint buzz that I let her use. And we were on hole 5 where the big lake is there on the left and she just throws this shot where it goes super high, you know, typical new person shot where it goes super high and fades super far left.
I forgot about that.
And it hits the water about 5 feet off the bank in the lake. And as soon as it hits the water, we see a flop in the water and there's just a dead bass laying.
So funny,
she somehow managed to just smash a bass right in the head and killed it. And there was just a floating dead fish in there. What is the likelihood of that happening?
Low.
Where it hits the water and you kill a fish. It was hilarious.
You got to hit it on a hyzer angle for it to do anything. It has to be right at the surface.
It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. It was
wild. That is ridiculous. That's right. We've never seen like that on the Pro Tour yet, like somebody kill a bird. Like have somebody rips a drive and a
bird
goes.
Which is surprising
because
like there's always geese everywhere on disc golf courses.
I'm surprised a geese hasn't gotten murdered yet.
And got lit.
Yeah, I think I've definitely seen a geese like take a golf ball before and just shake it off.
Yeah, we need to start getting the geese to wear bump caps.
That's true.
It's probably
Yeah, dude, can you imagine? Oh my gosh. Imagine if an eagle thumber comes down on top of a goose. See you later, buddy.
I think we were at USDGC.
Have fun in the next life.
I think we were at USDGC when we saw one of the cameramen took his hat off and like scratched his head. Yeah, he had a bump cap in him. He did it.
They're not super noticeable.
No.
No.
No, under the hats.
I still could save your life. We got to test how effective that is.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you want to do that?
I put it on a watermelon.
If I...
that is a great idea.
That's actually a great idea. How long do you think it's taking us to hit a watermelon?
Well, we can just stand above it and just...
That's true.
Because like that's the same as Eagle's stomach coming down. Like the... I just like
how
I can't.
How long do you think it's gonna take for us to hit it with a grenade?
Yeah, we had very different ideas of how we would test that. Trevor's just sitting a, well, be more a watermelon out there, 200 feet, and just chucking a grenade up.
I just wanted the most. Accurate
we could start
test.
That way. That's yeah. how you make a full YouTube video out of it.
That's right.
You start that way. Dang, and you end with mine.
If we were even reasonably good at social media, we would have had that idea when this was relevant.
Yeah. So let's make it relevant again. It relevant. I need you to hit me in the head with a disc.
Okay.
And then
also
we'll start
interesting
caps.
One like. I'm not even going to speak that into existence. Continue. Okay.
Sweet.
This next one comes from, not next question, these next topics all come from Simon Lazat's Instagram.
Simon Lazat.
He decided to go back on just asking his audience a bunch of questions and seeing how they answered, which always presents fascinating stuff. So
there
this first one, he said, do you think touring pros should throw stock run, and then parentheses, easy to buy discs so that you can get what the pros throw? Or should they throw the rare off runs that they like best and are basically impossible to buy?
I've got a different answer. Maybe companies should make their stock runs good enough that the pros would want to throw them.
Well, that's basically what he's asking. Like, do people care enough? So option A was, I wish they threw discs I could buy. Option B is, they should throw whatever they want. Option C was, I don't care.
Yeah.
In a shocking, in my opinion, shocking, the 68% of people voted they should throw what they want. The 13% voted, I wish they could throw a disc I could buy. And 19% said, I don't care.
Makes sense to me.
My initial reaction is they should throw what they want.
Yeah.
But then I think about it a little bit more. And then
you're a professional disc golfer, you're trying to make a livelihood. Like, you got to throw the best disc you have. Here's the problem, the root of the problem, because this is not a company wide. This is not every company has this issue. There are a few companies that are notorious for this because their plastic has declined. The root of the problem is the manufacturer himself. If I'm a professional disc golfer, that's how I make my living. I'm going to throw whatever you let me throw. Mm-hmm. So it's up to the companies, but they also want their players to perform.
In my opinion, I still think that there should be pro models that like Paul right now throws a Force for what your everyday person would use a Zeus for.
Mm-hmm.
So why not just stamp a Zeus on a Force? Mm-hmm. So then Paul can throw the Zeus.
I think that's just confusing.
We wouldn't know. So then I, the everyday man, can go pick up a Zeus and get the flight out of it that I expect versus I go buy a Force.
I think,
yeah, I don't like that. The problem is there are too many people who can throw as far as Paul McBeth or reasonably far. Like, it's not like that's unaccessible. There are certain sports.
I mean, just think of
argue,
how many people cram destroyers in their bags because they want to throw what the pros throw.
I don't know that it's as much of an epidemic as it used to be, though.
I don't think the company.
I
don't think the company has a problem with that. Yeah, because guess what? They bought them, though. Like, that's what the company's not going to have a problem with people.
No, because then
them.
You're just frustrated.
Yeah,
and then you.
But
have,
whenever I went through that, I didn't ever blame the disc. I just blamed the fact that I didn't throw hard enough.
Yeah,
I feel like, but maybe it's different. I don't
know. The closest example of this is in hockey.
But like then a disc makes you feel bad because you can't throw it hard
in hockey. Like sometimes one thing in hockey is you buy different curves on your blade, like, and certain players like their curves different ways. And like, if I were to buy an Alexander Ovechkin curve stick, just like a retail one, the curve would be reminiscent of his, like inspired by, but less severe because you're not a professional hockey player. The pro stock one has a much more severe curve that like just like the normal human isn't capable of using, like, so that's a thing. But I don't know. I think disc golf is too easy of a sport to need to enact that.
Well, I think it just gets really complicated because then you get into the people that actually want.
There's
that
too
disc.
Many people that would want the pro
but at
model.
At that point, you're not.
You guys
to
are
pro.
Like that. You
but
guys
like,
are like,
I'm
oh,
not gonna
this, the Venom, for example.
Correct.
You guys thought was kind of fraudulent.
But I'm not going to build my bag on pros. Once you get to that level, you build your bag based on what
but
works.
But people
best
are
for
always
going
to want to build their bags based on the pro.
Not pros don't. Pros won't.
Well, except
like if
the
you
pros.
Get to that level where you're throwing 500 plus feet. You are now throwing what works best for you. That's why some people throw bosses, some people throw destroyers,
but
some people throw nukes.
There's plenty
but
of
like the people who throw like 300 to 400 are the most likely to be like, Simon throws this, I must throw this.
Yeah.
Paul throws this, I must throw this. So then you can get those discs to work like that. I think it's a very easy marketing thing. where like, oh, Paul gets a full flight out of Zeus.
Well, but it's just a weird one because you're lying, essentially. You're lying to your customer, which is
I mean, we've already seen it happen so many times. We've seen Prodigy Pros back in the day play with Casey Aviar.
I think it's wrong.
But no one knew.
That doesn't mean it's not wrong.
Well, you're not marketing it. Discraft's not. Discraft's not saying, look at Paul throwing this Zeus. The Pro Tour is. Pro Tour's like, oh, there's Paul Macbeth with a Zeus.
But like, somebody's going to find out, and then the entire customer base just gets their trust breached with that company because now they know that they bought something that isn't what they thought it was.
Well, Paul used to have freaking Eagle stamped Firebirds.
Confusing. If I were a company, I would not want my players to throw those discs.
I think it's just complicated. I think that it takes you just a little bit of time to realize that disc is not going to fly like that for me.
Tennis does it too.
Do they?
You're not going and buying a Roger Federer racket and it being tuned the exact same way Roger Federer's racket's tuned.
It's a very big difference.
Golf does it. They have tour irons. Their wedges and stuff are grinded completely different.
It's not completely different, and it's very subtle. It's like the type of thing that only the most experienced pro would even notice in their golf club.
It's still different. Disc golf,
you're talking about a completely different... The whole thing would act completely different. Like, if you give a professional golfer an iron that you could buy at Dick's Sporting Goods or the one they play with, it's not going to change that much.
And it's basically the same thing because, you know, Paul is just trying to find the most stable forces he can throw.
Yeah. Really, and really, this whole thing is kind of null and void, like you said, because like the manufacturers can't even make discs that fly the same.
Yeah, they can't make it that precise anyway.
Now we're going to add another wrinkle to that, and now that's the biggest problem.
But that does remind me of a question to ask, though. What company do you think their sponsored players are throwing the most stock plastic?
MVP.
That makes sense.
Probably MVP, because they are actually the only
And they also
ones
don't have much Tour Series stuff.
Well, they just don't have much, like, the company that's most...
Yeah, it's not... Tour Series is the problem, because you can buy Tour Series. It's rare stuff. Yeah. It's a collectible stuff. So
it's like the Bowling Green D3s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Prodigy, Discmania, those are two of the big culprits.
Yeah, because Discmania, you still have guys throwing InnovaMade stuff.
Right.
And probably in Innova, too, I wouldn't say anymore.
Innova, the AJ Destroyers was big.
Yeah.
Paul kind of changed Innova. I would say it's mainly the older guys, though, are probably still throwing
Paul
old stuff.
Paul changed Innova because Paul's whole bag was stock for most of
Well, because
career.
Of this whole reason. Paul wanted people to be able to... Paul knows disc golf's about selling discs.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So why would Paul... And that's why his bag's still very similar, but like, why would you go bag a bunch of stuff that no one can sell?
Yeah.
That you can't sell? Yeah. Because then you're not worth anything to the company. Like, because the company, Prodigy, doesn't make money when someone goes and buys a Bowling Green D3.
Right.
They've already made their money.
It's already happened.
Mm-hmm. The Facebook person's making money. Yeah. That's why Paul switched from throwing T-Birds to Thunderbirds, because he was like, well, Kenny already has a T-Bird. So I'm sure there was more reasons to it, but one of them's like, the Thunderbird's a new disc that I can get similar results as a T-Bird out of that no one's name's tied to. Mm-hmm. And what happened? Modern era, I'm in love with a Thunderbird, not a T-Bird.
Yeah.
He's in love with a Thunderbird.
And then saying that Paul had his name on the crate for a while.
Had a crate
for a similar reason, because like people like me, I was going to imitate what Paul threw.
What's interesting is Paul actually has the foresight to put his name on discs that he knows aren't really built for him, but they are built for AMS.
Yeah,
he kind of just jumps ahead of
because like the Hades, Paul will never throw.
He doesn't have anything to do with that.
But like, how much more would the Hades throw sell?
I mean, he doesn't even throw the Zeus.
No, he doesn't even really throw the Zeus anymore. But how much more would the Hades sell if Paul threw a Zeus and it was stamped as a Hades?
I'm not disagreeing with the concept. I'm more so saying you shouldn't base your marketing off of a lie to your consumers.
They do it every time, though. Anyways, because like I can't go off.
It's not
true. I can't
it's
go
the
off,
same disc.
But I can't go buy a nuke that's going to fly like any of Brody's nukes.
Yes, you can.
Well, you can buy one. You just might not know
you're
buying
like,
one.
I had to buy 40.
But like that's on the manufacturer. That's already an issue. I'm just saying, like it just make another problem.
I think it just makes things complicated.
But it definitely. Back to the original question, like. Yeah, I think it's a manufacturer issue that players are like you as a manufacturer. You would think you'd want the latest greatest disc you've come out with to be.
I would have it in player contracts that like you. I don't know how I'd word it, but like you can go throw older runs of buzzes, but it has to be a stock buzz. Mm. Like it has to be a buzz that's available. Like if you're throwing you can throw a 2023 Tour Series buzz, or you can throw a stock Z buzz. But you can't go find, like, I don't know why I'm using Discraft because I feel like, but you, like if 10-year buzzes became the Bowling Green D3s,
right? Mm-hmm.
If that became a thing as Discraft, like I would outlaw that as a sponsored player, because like Bowling Green D3s is the most like iconic Prodigy disc and X1s, right? And then yeah. that sucks for Prodigy because it's like disc yeah. that someone can't just go buy.
Yeah.
Because like if you go buy a D3, it's not going to be overstable.
It's a weird hole.
It's not, it was never designed to be overstable. In.
It's almost like maybe if you make a good disc, you should keep making it and or try to replicate it.
Well, that's what I was saying. It's like, I just think...
like nobody made them stop make the X1.
I just think...
Nobody made them stop doing it.
Something must happen with the mold. That's the only thing that makes sense. But that would be like in my in a contract stuff. With player is like you can't throw rare discs just because it's hurting your sales at the end of the day
mm-hmm.
as a company.
Yeah, I don't know.
That makes a lot of sense.
Next Simon question was: do you think Paul McBeth shooting 18 under par on tour twice was A, good for the sport or B, bad for the sport? Y'all know what happened to your computer.
I don't know why my screen is yellow.
Was it good for the sport or bad for the sport?
I would say overall good because I don't really think it, I think it got us attention and like, well, I didn't see any kind of like public perception of people being like, wow, this disc golf is so easy. Like when it, like, cause like that would be the adverse side of that is like people thinking our sport is super easy. And I didn't really see that happening. So I would say good.
No. Yeah. I thought it was good. I mean, 91% of people said good. 9% said bad. Yeah. Yeah. Cause like to me, the first time it made it on SportsCenter and got like a whole right. segment on SportsCenter
yeah.
of people because the thing is like 18 under still just doesn't happen in disc golf. Like yeah. the only other times that I've seen it happen is at like local tournaments when par has been soft. Yeah. Cause I Chris Dickerson shot like 19 under, but it was at a place where there was like 500-foot par fives and stuff like that. And he was just eagling everything.
If it kept happening, like then it would be like a thing of like, okay, this is...
Because the one time Paul did it, didn't get nearly as much notoriety when he did it at Waco because the par was softer. 18 yeah. under then is a 15 under now, which I think has been shot again. The par was softer back then. But uh-huh. the 18 under at D-Glow is the one that really got widespread.
Because that was impossible.
Like, yeah, like the... I think you just did something on like the stats and it was like you're more likely to be struck by lightning twice or something like that. Than for him to shoot 18 under. So that was the one that actually got notoriety. And so I thought it was great. Next question was, do you think it would be good for disc golf in general if we shifted to more quote-unquote pay-to-play courses that are higher quality? This was more split than I expected. 39% said yes, 45% said no, and 16% said I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think shift is the right word because, no, the sport shouldn't shift that way because disc golf is still so small. It needs to grow, and it needs to be free in order to grow. Now, do I wish there were more? Well, here's my other big issue. So far, I have not seen a pay-to-play course that is worth paying. Well, I don't want to say worth it.
Unless there's cards.
That is, I have not seen a pay-to-play course. Yeah, actually, I've seen one, and it was Wild Horse. And guess why? Because it was on a golf course.
I pay to play Ivy. Because I'd love to have a golf cart on a golf course. Yeah.
Let me rearrange that. So far, the only pay-to-play courses I've played that like make sense for me were because I was on a well-manicured golf course, and I was riding in a golf cart. So,
but
like,
North Cove makes sense.
I was getting value.
North Cove is a disc golf property.
It makes sense. North Cove makes sense because their value is so good, and they are very cool courses. But once again, former golf course property. There's a theme here.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't feel like you're... Just one of the courses feels like you're on a golf course, and even then it doesn't really feel like you're on a golf course.
Well, that's my favorite one. I'm just saying that, like, if I'm paying for a disc golf course, I want to get value, and I think the problem is, like, golf courses have a ton of money poured into them, and they're pretty expensive, and there's a reason for that, because in order to manage a property to the extent that you're going to notice it and like, appreciate it, it takes... like full-time employees, mm-hmm. a ton of money. Like that's what it takes to take maybe 100 acres and turn it into something that you're going to be like, wow, this is well manicured. It's a lot to manage. So if you have a disc golf course and you're just putting a little bit of money in, like you're charging people $10 to play, then like that money just, you might not see the value. You just might not see it. And those courses a lot of times are still going to end up being cool. Like you're still going to be like, okay, well maybe... every so often I would pay to play this. But in order to have a course that you're going to consistently play, you have to feel the value.
Mm-hmm.
So I think pay to play courses are fine. I just want to see them get better.
I think the problem, we're in almost a like a lose-lose situation to a certain extent, because I think the reason you won't see value in pay to play is because free courses are so good.
That's also, and well, like, that's the thing too, is like
the existence of free courses nullifies the pay.
Well, like, here's why, because a Parks and Rec budget is a heck of a lot bigger than the budget that most of the pay to play courses are going to be able to get.
Well, because if I'm paying $10 per round, because it also caps what you're willing to pay because a free option exists.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So like realistically, most disc golfers, which I think one of the questions is like how much you're willing to pay coming up, but like $5, $10 a round is like at about as expensive as I think it could get disc golf wise right now, because and more people would pay 20, 25, 30, but the higher you go, the less often people are going to pay it because it's free courses.
Yep.
But like a golf course, like if I go pay $25 for, or $20 for 9 holes, whatever it is, I think it's 25 at Poplar, I just paid $25 to play 9 holes, right? But because of how all golf is pay to play, my expectations are very low of that course.
Yeah, that is obviously a big part of it too, fighting like, against those expectations.
If Poplar Forest was free to play, then paying $60 to go play 9 holes somewhere else would seem ludicrous. Mm-hmm. But since the baseline is like $25, paying 60, the experience doesn't have to be that much greater.
It's an uphill battle.
So I think that we're kind of... So like, would it be good for disc golf in general? It's a win. It's a win-lose, right? Because like, it would be good in the sense of like, if it shifted to pay-to-play, then like courses would be all disc golf only. There could be more attention to the disc golf detailed side, and it wouldn't be like, oh, this course is nice because it's in a nice park, or this course is nice because it's on a golf course. It'd be like, no, this course is just nice because it's a nice disc golf course, which not a ton of those exist in the sense. Yeah. Like New London is nice just because it's a nice disc golf course. Diavolo we just played is nice just because it's a nice disc golf course. But a lot of times if you go to a nice park, that's what makes it a nice disc golf course.
Yeah.
So it would be good for the sport in that sense of like we could build history on properties, because like realistically if someone buys the land out at New London and develops it, that course is gone.
It's true.
Diavolo, if the local park and rec department decides they'd rather have this huge sports complex go in and that's the best land for it, that course is gone. So, like, if it's privately owned, pay-to-play, and sustaining itself, then at least we can build history and not worry about, like, someone else outside of the sport making a decision that changes it. But I don't think we can ever shift that way, because, like, a pay-to-play course, to be profitable, you'd have to have so much money go in up front, and it had to be such a long-term investment, because you're going to have to chip away with, like, $5 or $10 entry fees, because, like, Eagles Crossing put a ton of money in. But the problem is it's like $25 a round and it's in the middle of nowhere. And so it's like...
Because like I get further away from playing Eagles Crossing, if that course was nearby, like I would pay to play that course.
How often?
I think it depends on like how much I'm playing disc golf. But let's say I'm an avid disc golfer. Let's say I didn't work here and I'm just an avid disc golfer that plays a couple times a week.
Yeah, you play 4 times a week.
I think I would play there twice a month. Like I think that's reasonable.
Yeah, because like cause, so because
it was like that course, it was pretty cool. Like there was attention to how well it was manicured and that. I would be curious let's say Simon Lizotte buys a property and puts it in a good area where there's a lot of disc golfers, and he puts a lot into it up front. So from the very beginning, it's manicured at the level of a golf course, and it's got a restaurant attached to it, a pro shop. But it's just for disc golf, but it's just manicured to that level that you would expect a country club golf course to be manicured, and he charges $45 a round. You get carts as well. $45 a round. Are people going to go? Because now, at this point, you are getting the full experience that you would get out of a round of golf, as well as it being perfectly manicured. You have a golf cart. How many people would pay it, and how
often? I think people would go for the touristy part. I think, again... It would just be, I think you'd have a hard time getting the local scene to regularly play it.
Yeah, I don't think you'd have regulars there, really.
That'd be the tough part.
It's tough.
Let's say that
golf's expensive. That's the thing.
You said you'd play twice a month, Eagles Crossing.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's, if there's still $25, let's say that you have 600 golfers, okay?
Yeah.
And they're all willing to do that, 600 disc golfers in an area that are at that level, that are willing to play it twice a month. That is $30,000 a month.
Yeah.
Realistically, to keep that's $360,000 a year, you are probably close to breaking even, maybe losing money.
Yeah.
To keep it at the level that you're talking about. And that doesn't factor in Eagles Crossing put millions in.
Yeah.
So like you need to be profiting probably $100,000, $200,000 a year for it to make sense. And you're not doing that if you're only bringing in $360,000. Yeah. And that's assuming 600 people are willing to play it twice a month each.
Right.
Now I think the biggest problem
tournaments
is,
are a bigger way to get stuff in, but
I think the biggest problem, is your most disc golfers. It's not what they're accustomed to. You know, they're not going to choose it. Golf is super expensive. Like, as somebody who loves golf, just because of how expensive it is, I'm never going to play more than a couple times a month.
But it makes sense because they have people out there constantly working to, because you have, with the way that golf works, how important the ground is, you have to like be constantly manicuring it.
Well, golf also, nice.
So it makes sense that it's expensive because of the people you have to
pay. No, it does. I'm just saying
golf also just brings in so much money from the like HOA of the neighborhood around it.
That's what I'm saying. The membership. It doesn't make much sense for disc golf to cost money because you're not putting that much in. You don't have to. There'd be no reason for you to put as much manicuring into a disc golf course.
Yeah, it's totally the optics. And the interesting thing is about like disc golf and the consumer base right now is pay-to-play disc golf courses, if they actually became like huge, would be actually bad for retailers because there's probably a lot of people out there that monthly spend like a pay-to-play disc golfing budget. They just spend it on disc because like that's what they...
Yeah,
like that's what you spend money on in disc golf. Yeah. But if pay-to-play courses were like the norm, that money would go towards their rounds. Sure. But I don't think people want to do that. Like, I think people would rather, like, one of the coolest thing about disc golf is that it can be free.
Whenever I hear people talk about getting into disc golf, one of their like three reasons they always say is because it's free.
Yeah. Well, because the other problem too is let's be real here. Okay, if pay-to-play disc golf got to a point where the average round cost you $25. Now you're deciding if you're playing golf or disc golf.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's also
true. Very true.
That is true. That
becomes a whole different thing.
Because, golf may have a little bit more barrier to entry with the equipment, but, like, you can find clubs real cheap somehow.
Well, it's also, like,
secondhand.
The disc golf community is awesome and tight-knit and stuff, but, like, if you walk into your office and now all of a sudden you play golf, you just found community in your office.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you're going to find a golfer most place or someone who, like, at least knows golf most places you walk into.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the other... as long as free courses exist, pay-to-play courses will be very hard to establish unless they have something else bringing money in. Like, if it's a Maple Hill where you have a Christmas tree farm.
It is so tough, yeah.
That's the whole part. And I think that it should, in my opinion, I think that's okay. I think it should kind of stay that way.
I think so, too. I think the identity of the sport is going to be mostly free courses. I think if you're going to do a pay-to-play, multi-use property makes sense, you know, like, don't just start that as your only business unless you're somebody like maybe a Simon Lazat and you think you can make a tourist spin out of it, because other than that, you're just not going to make a profit. You just got to find a right way to do it to where you're getting more out of a piece of land than just a disc golf course, because I don't see it. It's really tough.
Yeah. The next question he asked was, how many years is disc golf away from a tournament winner getting $100,000? Yeah, the options were 1 to 5, 6 to 10, greater than 10, or never going to happen.
1 to 5.
52% said 1 to 5. 34 said 6 to 10. 9% said greater than 10. 6% said never going to happen.
What did the tour championship winners take home this year?
50, I think.
Was it 45?
Might have been 45.
I think it's 45. Yeah, I would say 5 years.
Yeah. No, I think, because this is a tournament winner.
Yeah, I'm
now,
saying
the
it'll
average
be the
tournament winner would be completely different.
Oh, yeah.
But a tournament winner, I think the tour championship, because like realistically, I mean, there's enough money in the sport and enough money in the PDGA that if they just decide to do it as a press thing, they could do it tomorrow.
I've always said they should try crowdfunding at purse one time. They've done that in esports before. Just say, hey, we want to have the biggest. Now, I think there'd be a little pushback probably because there is money in the sport. But if they were like, hey, we want to make Worlds the biggest purse ever this year, you can donate to the purse. I'd be curious to see what would happen, how much people would pump that up. Because even if it was just another $50,000 and like all the proceeds from that go directly to the winner or something like that, then like you could jump them up a ton.
Yeah. Now, this next question is, would this be the perfect course? 6 holes tightly wooded and technical, 6 holes fairly wooded and long, 6 holes open with moderate elevation changes throughout the entire course.
There's no perfect course.
84% of people said yes. It'd be perfect course.
I'd say that's a good...
16% said no.
It'd be pretty dope.
It sounds like a good course, but like... I think you cannot just explain something that vague and then call it the perfect course. Like, who, what?
Well, is it the perfect idea? Is it the perfect design of a course for it? I think that's what he's saying.
Is
the perfect way to design a course for it to be that diverse?
I, I don't know. I think it's fine. See, my thing is, I think it's fine for a course to have an identity. It doesn't have to try to be every single kind of disc golf course at once. So, like, mm-hmm. while I do enjoy where a course has some wooded parts and some not, like, that's, I'd probably argue that's even, like, a favorite thing for me. But, like, I don't think one course is better than another just because it has a mix of holes, whereas one is more open or more wooded. I think a course can have a brand and a style.
Because you only have to make it through six holes of woods.
12. Oh. Six are fairly wooded and long. Six are technical and wooded.
Because, like, Northwoods Black is an incredible and polarizing course, and it's because of just the whole theme of the course is just punishing woods throughout. Like, I think it gives a course a brand a lot of times when it does stick to its guns. But, you know, the mix is good.
I think this is probably a stupid thing to say because it's either obvious or it's dumb. But I think that a disc golfer is better if they play better in the woods.
I would agree. I think
that doesn't mean they would win if they were on an open course, but it means that I think that they have more skill.
I would say a long wooded course.
Yeah. Like New London.
Yeah.
Well, because, like, if New London is not that tight.
Well, but, like, because if you go and you play a really short technical North Carolina woods course, that doesn't mean you're a better disc golfer distance is a skill.
Yes, absolutely.
But if you're really good at a long technical wooded course, like Northwoods Black, yeah. Northwood Black, I always put an S at the end, Northwood Black, then I would agree that technically you're a better disc golfer because you should, in theory, be able to translate that to open success.
And you can throw the disc where you're trying to throw it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what makes you a good disc golfer is you know where you're throwing the disc.
Yeah. So, okay. But that's why, because, like, Paul McBeth, when he was as dominant as he was incredible in the woods.
Yeah.
And he was incredible in the Ricky Wysocki. Like, the Calvin Heimberg.
Calvin's
players,
guy right now,
players
yeah.
who...
Gannon.
Like, you... If you're the best disc golfer in the world, there is no, oh, we're going into the woods, Chris Dickerson has a better shot.
Yeah.
There is no, okay, Michael Johansson might sneak in, Drew Gibson, now that we're back at LVC, might come mm-hmm. into conversation. It's just Calvin Heimberg is freaking good.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter if we're at Northwood Black,
not
LVC...
The player of the year, though.
Yeah, it doesn't matter where. Well, no, Isaac Robinson is a player where yeah. he is going to be more likely to win, in my opinion, in the woods. Because it exposes, he does not have that elite level distance, in my opinion, to where, like, when he gets in the woods, his angle control shines a little bit more. So he is more successful in the woods than in the open. But that's because, like,
he puts the disc where he's trying to put it.
Yeah, whereas, like, the best disc golfer in the world is going to be good everywhere.
The bottom line is there are some guys that can win in the can only win in the open, but anybody who can win in the woods can probably also win in the open.
Yeah, it's just only thing that would be the caveat is if it's too long of an open course.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I think that's what holds Isaac Robinson back is he just doesn't have that next level distance.
Then you just never have birdie putts.
But yeah, but someone who can win in the open can't win in the woods. Someone who win in the woods can win in the open because
hit him with it.
Yeah,
I agree.
Simon Lazat said, "Do you think Mando's on a course that is lacking trees are a good tool to force shot shapes and fairways?" And it said options are Mandos are probably needed. Mandos can be avoided with good design, and I hate Mandos.
I like Mandos. And I actually really like Brody's idea of making Mandos switch.
Yeah.
Across rounds, being like, okay, today's Mando left, tomorrow's Mando right.
Yeah, I like that.
I think Mandos are too useful of a tool. Like, I get why some people like them. I mean, half the time they're just for safety, but I actually think
them for course design.
I think they're a great tool.
Well, I think the options...
And they don't have to look ugly either. Like, that's the thing is sometimes they do look ugly, but they don't have to. They can just be a little M on a tree.
Yeah.
The options were, I think, wrongly put together with the question. Because the question was like, Mandos on a course that is lacking trees are a good tool to force shot shapes and fairways. If it's lacking trees, what other way do you really have for shot shapes and fairways?
OB.
But then the options were Mandos are probably needed. Mandos can be avoided with good course design.
That's okay. So that's what bothers me. A lot of people like are against like course design that's not using the natural layout, which like I get. I mean, I think that's cool. Like whenever you have like cool lines through trees and everything, but I just don't understand like using OB. Like people don't like the using OB.
Well, here's
in places like that and using Mandos, and you're just trying to make the hole more fun or more challenging.
Well, what's funny to me, Brody brought this up, and as soon as he said it, I was like, that makes perfect sense. Because Brody was like, do you think the golf course, everything's natural out there, right? Quote unquote. Do you think they rolled up and that like the hills were perfectly, like the everything was perfectly laid out and they just naturally put a course in?
Yeah.
No. But like it's more accepted because like, oh, that's a river. It doesn't matter if it was man-made dug out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, it's so like if in theory in disc golf, it's way easier for us to put, I said in theory and my Siri popped up. In disc golf, it's easier for us to put a pole with a Mando sign, right?
Yeah.
Now, we need to make it look better than that. It's easier than that. But disc golfers are like, oh, well, that could have been avoided with good course design. But if I had all the money in the world and I brought in a bunch of pine trees and I did the same thing, yeah. now that's good course design.
It's so yeah. true.
Like, that's so dumb.
You yeah. could put OB in the exact same places at, like, Winthrop, for example, but if it was all water, people would never call it gimmicky.
Yeah. Damn. And it's like, it is the exact same thing. Yeah. It's just a way to accomplish it without having
to. But it's
to,
so true. Like, it's like, we don't have the budget to be terraforming the way that golf
yeah. maybe if it was
do.
A pay to play.
yeah, maybe like, it was pay to play.
The land is never going to be perfect. So sometimes to make a better hole, we need these things.
Yeah, and that's what's so funny to me. Is like, that is funny. You wouldn't, if instead of it being a Mando, it was just a tree there that forced you to throw right,
yeah.
people would be like, oh, what great course design. And then it's a Mando, and we're like, people are such a lazy course design.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the same freaking thing.
Yeah.
Where were we going to go? Like, we had to put the hole here, and these trees are here, and that mountain, we can't get rid of it. like,
this next one, do you think Pro Tour tournaments with more than one course are A, good for the sport, B, bad for the sport, C, insignificant?
I think people who have a problem with Mandos are just people who suck at throwing turnovers.
Oh.
there you go. I think good for the sport.
I think they're good for the sport, yeah.
I think it's something. Now, I'll say this.
They do. If they have more than one, I do think they need to be four rounds, but I think they're good.
Yeah, I think that it needs to be two courses maximum.
Yes.
And at least four rounds. But I think it is one thing that disc golf has that's like kind of makes it different, and I like that it allows you to mix up courses. Like, I think that's why... You know, it's kind of fun to watch Ledgestone.
Yeah. 67% agreed.
Yeah.
And 22% said insignificant. Only 11% of people thought it was bad for sport. Yeah. This one, I think it self-corrected itself, but it was interesting for a while. So it says, you're playing a par 5. Most everyone would agree it's actually a par 4. You miss a 25-footer for eagle, tap in for a birdie, par 4. For a birdie 4, sorry. The same hole next year gets changed to a par 4. You miss the same 25-footer for birdie, and you tap in for par. Do you feel any different? The options are yes, a birdie feels better than a par. No, same hole, same score, no difference. Depends on how the round is going, or the options.
Well,
I certainly feel different.
Yeah, it definitely would depend on how the round is going, but yeah, you definitely feel different.
I get to click that minus button on
your disc. there's a very big difference in your feeling when you give yourself another stroke towards under par or further under par and not.
Yeah, like 40% of people agreed, said yes, a birdie feels better.
So only 40, that many?
40% of people told the truth.
If people, yeah, say, yeah, if you said the other one, you're lying.
37% of people said no, same hole, same
score, no
difference.
That's if people are just trying to act different.
Yeah, that's bull crap.
It's ridiculous.
There's no way.
You know you care.
You feel better whenever you see your course go down, your score go down.
23% of people said depends on how the round's going. Whatever, that's fine. But yeah, 37.
You're a bunch of liars.
Basically, 37% of people lied.
You're trying to be like, oh yeah, of course. Same, like I know math, so like yeah, the math checks out.
Par's irrelevant.
It's okay. You can admit.
Yeah, par is irrelevant to the scope of end score versus rest of field. But you're gonna feel better if you shoot 10 under. Versus
yeah, let me tell you.
Par.
Let me ask you this, okay? You shoot a 68 into par 69. Would you? That was too complicated way to ask this. Do you feel better at the end of the course whenever it says even or whenever it says -1?
-1.
I was about to go down way too complicated of a path to say that.
As someone who's been trying to break 68 for a long time, I'd feel a lot better if that thing said -1. next one. Do you think headphones should be banned for tournament play?
Yes.
56% said yes. 44 said no.
Yeah,
a short hole in the Pro Tour allows for ace runs and has 80 plus birdie percentage. Is option A, a bad hole and boring to watch? Option B, a fun hole that is exciting to watch? Option C, insignificant?
It has
short 80. Hole in the Pro Tour allows for ace runs, has an 80 plus percent birdie percentage.
80 plus?
Yeah. Everyone birdies it.
Bad hole.
It's a bad hole. Yeah, I'd completely agree. 70% of people disagree with us. So yeah, 70%
Mando in there.
80% is too high.
70% said it's a fun hole. It's exciting to watch.
I would argue.
What's fun about if everyone got the same score?
Yeah, it's not fun.
What's fun?
Now, okay, maybe if like the ace run is like,
but it's a short hole. Can't even be that cool of an ace.
Yeah, that's like 80%. I don't think people understand how insanely easy that is. I think if the answer were like even 70%. Or 65%, I'd be like, that's fine. But 80%, that's a little bit.
That means
bit,
like, that's like, well, in the modern day Pro Tour, that means everyone that has a chance at winning birdied it.
Yeah.
And then
the two people that are like the
donators to the pot didn't.
Yeah.
Oh, guys, easy. Put four Christmas trees right in front of the tee pad.
Yeah.
Now we're talking.
The purpose of a disc golf hole in the course is to provide an opportunity for separation. Because imagine if you're trying to like chase somebody down, you get to that hole, it's a waste of everybody's time.
Well, that's a good point.
Now this one I think
like to
is
know what the highest birdie percentage across the whole field on the tour was for a certain hole this year.
Certain hole, that'd be an interesting one.
Because
the easiest hole on tour.
I just want to know what 80%. I'll just find one example. You can continue.
This one I think more looks at the psyche of a disc golfer.
What's like a super easy hole that you could think of right off the top of your head? Like one that's so
Idlewild hole. That little the elevated hole at Idlewild, that's gotta be up there.
The elevated hole.
Like it's just like a 200-foot shot in the woods, elevated basket. No OB, no nothing. Okay. Right before the forehand, and then after the forehand, par four is the Y tree. So it's two before the Y tree. I think it's probably like hole 10.
Okay, I will find it.
Somewhere in there. This one says, when playing disc golf, what do you see more often? Bad putts that somehow stay in, good putts that somehow fall out. Insignificant.
Bad putts that somehow stay in.
So 48% of people said good putts that somehow fall out.
They, once again, you're dirty liars.
Well, no, I think...
I think that's just how they're looking at
it. I was going to say, I think this is a perception question. Because maybe. There are definitely way more bad putts that stay in.
Because,
just statistics.
The good putt needs to be the one that hit, like, all chains. And if a putt... Like, if the entire putter is touching chains and it goes out, I would say that's a, like, that's a tough break.
If you...
But, that happens way less.
But even
but
that,
also think about it. If you throw a bad putt that stays in, you don't leave the round that day saying, I had a bunch of bad putts that stayed
that's
in.
That's what I'm saying. Good point. That's what I'm saying. Well, like, think how many times I hit low left and it goes in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I make up for everyone who has good putts that fall out. But all my bad putts stay in. No, I think you see it way more, but our brain is conditioned to remember the negative a lot more than the positive.
Or more like the things that are against us.
Yeah, we don't remember the good break. We got to remember the bad break. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think you see more good putts that fall out when actually you see a lot more bad putts go in.
I
lot more, not even close.
Also, they're probably not good putts.
I don't think you just has that stat.
Also, that's the other thing too. Just because you hit some chains doesn't mean it's a good putt.
Chains is not a guarantee make.
Yeah. Should the Pro Tour allow video evidence for rules call in the future, even though not every player is being filmed?
Oh, here we go. Okay.
I feel like that's...
This was the easiest hole to preserve was hole 9, and it was playing 77%
birdie percentage.
This is in round 3.
There you go. That's basically the hole.
Yeah. So that's basically the hole you're describing.
Well, go look at the leaderboard and just like round, like the final round, just look at the scores. Oh, I guess you can't on.
Not on here.
Turn your phone sideways. Will that make it pop up where you can see everyone's scores?
No. I mean, I can by doing that on every
single. I was just going to say like, I was just curious if you like scroll down, if it was like everyone in the top 30 birdied it. Then that hole is pointless.
If it were 80% birdie, but then it was 15% bogey, then I would say it's fine because then at least when you're not birdieing it,
you're losing
two.
Yeah.
But if it's 80% birdie, 20% par, I think that's just too easy.
Yeah. Should the Pro Tour allow video evidence for rules call in the future, even though not every player is being filmed?
No.
No. 54% said no, 46% said yes.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Now, this is a fun one. Have you ever seen a footfall and not called it?
Yeah.
Yeah. 81% said yeah.
Yeah.
We're all cheaters.
I am only calling a footfall if I feel that it provided a severe advantage, and you rarely ever see that because most of the time it's somebody like slipping or tripping.
Yeah.
Like, who cares?
A player throws OB 350 feet down the fairway. The hole has a designated spotter who marks where the disc last crossed in bounds. The spotter was standing within 50 feet of the disc's flight path, and the players were 350 feet away. The players can now overrule the spotter's quote-unquote suggestion and give the player a different lie. Do you think that makes sense? Yes, the player probably saw it better. B, no, the spotter had a better view.
I think the only issue with this is that the spotters are always, like, super voluntary people. Like, they're not, like, if the spotters were all like PDGA officials or vetted in some extent, I would say you have to go with the spotter. Like, they,
well, you would, yeah,
but I would say because they're not, then like just let the players decide.
Well, that's the whole problem why the spotter doesn't have a say right now is they're not officials,
they're just random people,
they're not like tournament officials.
Yeah,
so like they could by chance be a PDGA official,
and they
but
could
like,
have bias.
Not all of them are, whereas the players are officials, so that's the whole reason. Yeah. I have seen some criminal overrulings, I'll say that. I've been out of wild hole, I think it was 17.
I'll say this, as a player, if the spotter was super close, like I'm probably going to side with them.
Because the spotter, in this scenario, I think it was a year, I walked with Brody, he finished up, and I went back to watch lead card. And I was walking with lead card, and I was standing up by the green. And the spotter is there, And the way this disc came in, it never flew the green, right? Okay. It like kind of hyzered around. And so it basically just was like in the creek for the rest of, for the end of its flight, basically. Mm-hmm. All of us up here, clear as day, it did not fly the green. So the spotter marked it truly where the last spot was in bounds. It would have been like a 60-foot putt for the person. The card gets up there, looks at the disc, and the spotter's like, I watched it. I know, like, it's clear as day. It went out right here. And then he walked away, as a spotter should. And then the card argued for like 10 minutes back and forth and asked the spotter again. The spotter's like, I was standing right where I am right now. I had a clear view. I know the disc went out right here. The car kept arguing.
As the spotter says that to me, like, I'm just
and okay. They finally gave him the spot on the green, and they tapped out for like a 5-footer. And it was like a clear as day, like everyone player, up here. But the players, they were just looking at the disc, and they're like, "There's no way my disc got here and didn't cross the green."
There is a problem.
And it's like, well, there was a way. We watched it happen.
Players totally gang up sometimes. Wasn't there an instance with like Paige and Kat and like overruling a spotter once, where like where they put a flag down or something?
I don't know.
Water? Like it does happen sometimes where players, especially if you've got multiple friends on a card, they'll just gang up on a spotter.
Mm. Yeah,
and it's like,
well, the spotter was getting like very upset, but he couldn't do anything because he's like,
yeah.
Because like if the spotter tells me that, I'm gonna be like, okay.
The spotter, they're basically telling the spotter to his face, we don't believe you, you're wrong. When they were 400 feet down at the green tee, and he's standing right there, and he was like, I saw it. I was right here. But he like couldn't say anything. So he just like walked back, just like shaking his head down.
Up, dude. Justice for that spotter.
Yeah. And so in my opinion, I think that like the obvious 86% of people said no, the spotter had a better view. I agree with them, but you have to have some type of regulation.
Who was it on that card? Type it on your laptop. So I can read it.
I'll tell you after.
You want to get my live reaction?
No, I don't.
Come on, get my live reaction. I won't say it. I promise I won't say it. Just type it.
I had to remember. I think it was this year. It was
You guys ready for this? Oh my god.
Well then this
dude.
Is the people who are calling it.
Oh my
and then,
gosh.
I wanna say there was like one more other bigger
and Brody
person.
Was on this card?
No, Brody and I were in the crowd.
Oh,
Brody
okay.
was done. Brody was done with his round.
Oh,
we went back
gosh,
and walked.
Dude.
Yeah, but it was the the first player I typed.
Like that.
The first player I typed was the player who it was their
threw
disc.
The shot.
Yeah.
Something. Typical.
Typical.
so I think there should be some type of like make the spotters an official.
Yeah. It doesn't take that long. It's
maybe even just on crucial holes.
Yeah.
Like maybe
holes.
Just
like blind shots, maybe.
Yeah, like maybe just on a, because like it takes like 10 minutes to do that PGA thing, and then you're tournament official.
Depends who you are.
So I would just have them do that true. And then like place those people in specific parts of the course where it's like, hey, when you get to hole 17, the spotter is a tournament official, what they say goes. As far as where your disc went out. Mm-hmm. If you want to play a provisional and bring it back to us, you can. But the spotter says, so then like if the spotter, because the spotter has the option to be like, I didn't really see, I didn't have a clear line. This is kind of what I saw. It's up to the card. You know what I mean? But then if the spotter's like, I saw it. It went out right here, no doubt.
Hit him with it.
Then if you want to go and question it, you can. But
I really, one thing, this is not off topic necessarily, but just a random thing. It made me really happy at USDGC to watch players walk by spotters and say thank you for spotting. Just like warms my heart.
It does.
Because they're not getting paid.
Yeah.
They're standing out there all freaking
day.
They do want to be there, to be fair.
They get $100 worth of swag pretty much every tournament they sponsor.
In fairness, they do clamor
and,
for those jobs.
And,
yeah, I know.
But yeah,
but
no,
still.
It's good. It's good that they thank
and
them.
At MVP, Connor, they do pay $100 to be out there.
Yeah, that was the crazy. that was the crazy.
They
one.
Still do it.
But
they did
like,
again this year.
Still, like there's just like
that's
there's old guys.
Sam's Club, man.
Especially at USCGC with how like historic that event is. There's old guys that have been doing that since their 30s. They like do it every single year. It's like their thing. And so just like for a player to walk by and just like to show you a little bit of like that you have worth and be like, thank you for spotting. I appreciate it. Whenever I saw Brody do that, I would just be like, I love that guy.
It's very. I will
that's
say
a, that's a Brody. They don't.
I will
want
say
you
it's
see,
it's
man.
Very
that's
rare. The, yeah, it's very rare to see a player not do it, but when you do, it's like
ew. Yeah, you little sicko.
He just walked right by him and didn't say thank you. Or even,
I didn't know like you're supposed to do that.
It's not a. It's just kind of like a common courtesy.
Whispering about me.
it's just like a common courtesy thing. Like it's not like a.
I'm gonna give him a hug.
But like this, the other common courtesy.
Gonna kiss all the spotters.
Yeah.
The other common courtesy, and this one I have seen forgotten. A lot because it's a very heated moment of you just went OB, they laid down their flag. They only have like three flags. So they need that flag back.
Oh, you got to take it back.
And so you don't have to. Again, no rules. But it's a very nice thing. Like when pros go OB, the last thing they want to do is pick that flag up and walk it the 50 feet back to the spotter. But when they do it, then I'm like, that's a good person. Right,
I'm happy to know all the. You need to tell me all these things for whenever I'm in tournaments.
Well, like if you ever see someone not do it, they know what they're supposed to do.
I'm going
to
bring a tub of cookies with me.
Good idea.
At every spot, I'm going to hand them.
Oh my gosh! Good job.
Well, I love that.
Thank you so much for spotting. Here's a sticker.
There's that one spotter on at USDGC, and he likes. I think he likes grip locked. And so he gives us a sticker. It says, like, I got, what's his name? Gosh darn it. It has his name on it. It says, so-and-so showed me green on hole, like, 10 or something.
That's funny.
Or it's like, if you land safe, he gives you a sticker.
He's
that's
a legend.
Every year.
Yeah, if you're, that's if you're, so like, funny. If yeah, you're, like, awesome. Really big in the spotter game, you got your own stickers.
Yeah, well, there was, like, the spotter on
hole. The spotters at USDGC are awesome.
Spotter at hole 4 back in the day, if you birdied, you took a picture with him every year.
That's true.
And so, like, that was, a, that was a big thing. It was like, if you got the birdie, you got the picture with him.
Wow.
Yeah. Final question. How much money would you pay per round to play a nice disc golf course? Options were I would never pay to play disc golf, $5 to $10, $10 to $20, $20
plus.
Too
ambiguous. Because like you can't answer that question without knowing what it is. Because like,
if it's like what you were talking about with the Simon Experience course, the Simon Line course, I mean, I'd pay the $45 to do that once.
There is a, like, if money is no object and this course is like literally the greatest thing ever, like stuff that you wouldn't even fathom existing on a disc golf course, and there's no telling how much I would pay for one round at least.
Yeah.
Well, how I might pay $100.
Answer it in a way of like your, how much would you pay
it's
a local nice course and you have free options in the area.
That's just so hard for me. Like,
how much would you regularly pay?
I need you to give me a scale. Can you compare it to a course?
$5 to $10, $10 to $20.
No, of like what is this course like? Because like that's just so hard for me to answer.
Let's just go Eagles Crossing. Eagles Crossing is where New London is. And it
and
costs
how often am I gonna
you
tell
need
me
to play
how many,
four times a month.
I play four
once
times
a, week.
A month.
What are you willing to pay to play that course once a week?
$10.
$10.
I would say like the most, like I would say I would do 15.
Once a week. 15?
Once a week.
I would do 10.
I'd say 10. That's probably about. Just because, and part of it would be, now if you put Eagles Crossing in some other areas, I'd probably pay 15 or 20. But part of it is like we have so many nice courses.
Yeah.
But if you put it where like it's our only nice course, our only pro level course, then my answer might change.
Well, remember we're getting rid of New London. It's where New London is.
Yeah, I'm just saying like you still would have like Falling
New
Creek
London?
Still is a great course.
More like Old London.
Yeah.
More like Old Dominion.
So 3% said I would never pay to play disc golf. 65% said $5 to $10. 28% said 10 to 20, and 4% said 20
I just
plus.
Hope you. I would never play to play disc golf or pay to play disc golf. People, well, whenever some awesome course comes up in your area and you really want to at least try it out, nope, can't because you
can't,
would never pay.
You would never pay.
You would never pay.
3%ers.
So if you are a Simon fan and he makes this awesome, incredible. Touristy, really cool
I
course.
Actually heard that's what he's planning to do, and he was using this as a list of who he's not letting in.
So,
he took the
voters,
and he has a,
like, well, I
it's his list on the wall of like if these people walk in.
Like, well,
kick
I
them
figured
out.
I'd try it once, but like normally, but no, you said you would never.
You
pay.
Said you would never pay. So,
yeah, be
never
careful,
say never.
Man. Don't double down on that kind of stuff, man. You never know. Might that's come back to
they didn't
someday.
Double down.
The internet's forever.
I never double down on anything.
My mom told me that a long time ago. The internet's forever. That's why I say crazy stuff on this podcast.
16 grand, man.
Yeah. The UltiRoll released
Hunter's
the second
stolen debit.
UltiRoll released the second part of the fandom survey, which is how fans feel about disc manufacturers.
Hit him with it.
So the first thing that we see here is the average manufacturer fandom score, which you have MVP Axiom Streamline winning with a 7.29.
Shocker.
This is out of 10. 10 point maximum.
Can we just talk about how.
Let's talk about it.
Wait, like, this is
gyro
from Simon's. Thing?
No, this is a fandom survey.
This is a separate thing.
Okay. Now. Separate
I was saying,
thing.
That makes sense. Then.
New survey.
Like,
this
how
is UltiWorld.
Did the gyro people like just completely spin on its head? Well, I know the answer. Simon Lizotte.
I think they were just closeted for so long.
It's insane, dude.
This is good quality
that
stuff.
That company, man. I'm well, glad then, to see it because they do have good quality stuff.
Then second and third, you might as well have a tie. You have
I'm
Innova.
Just thinking about how much I hated MVP before.
Everyone did.
Like, I didn't hate him, but like I definitely wasn't bagging it.
I just was like, well, like, they did a great job of turning their brand perception around because previously their brand perception
we're
was
better than you.
Your MA3 guy that was telling you he was getting 50 feet farther distance because he was throwing gyro.
Yeah.
And you're like, sick.
Now they just make good
you
discs.
Still throw 100 feet shorter than everyone else on the course out here, bud.
Ooh, hit him with it.
So let's calm it down.
Name drop.
No. Oh. And that was also when they Bill only had Murray. They also only had black they also only had black rims back then. So yeah. you'd look at their bag and it just was gross.
Good point.
Because I'd be like, how do you know the difference between those 17 drivers you have in your bag?
I mean, I specifically remember getting passed by people, like letting people play through with full gyro bags.
And you immediately thought they didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah, I'd be playing with my dad. I'm a bad person, I realize. We're all bad people. Everybody's a bad person. But they're playing through and they throw a shot. My dad would look at me and be like, that was a pretty good shot. And I go, no, they're not good.
Yeah, because like, they have gyro. I'd be like,
they're throwing MVP.
Yeah. That was the
and I believe that. I was like, I, now yeah. I would say that as sicko, a joke. Dude. But I believe that they are worse than me.
I didn't believe they were worse than me. I just thought they were worse than me at disc golf.
That's what I mean.
If someone pulled up with a full gyro bag in 2018, I was beating them by 10 strokes in my head. It was over. I was just like, okay, well, at least someone else is here, so I have some competition.
Hit them with it.
Because the full gyro guy's not doing nothing. Nowadays, they're the number one fandom score, and yeah. I went full gyro for 30 days, and I played the best disc golf of my life.
Dude,
not even close. I would do it again. I could go full gyro.
Do it again.
30 years. Full gyro 30 years.
You know what? That'll be the next video.
I took a mortgage out with gyro. 30 years.
So they got 7.29. Then Innova and Discraft might as well be tied for second and third at 6.77 and 6.76. So 7.76. Latitude 64 came in fourth at 6.58. Discmania 6.51, DGA 5.98, Dynamic 5.26. Then you have Prodigy 4.11, and then this was surprising to me. Lowest of them all, you had Lone Star 3.58.
Wow,
man, you haters are vicious.
I'd just like to say one more thing.
You need to, like, live check
for those of you for those of you COVID boomer disc golfers who have only been playing for a couple years. First of all, love you. Thank you for all your service. Second of all, don't go judging us about how much we look down on people for MVP, because you don't understand what it was like.
Yeah, no, you don't.
You don't understand what it was like to live back then.
You haven't walked a step in my shoes.
You would have hated them too.
Yeah, back then the cool stuff was T-Birds and rocks.
That's not sure.
So I think you might go on the computer to see it. But these are some of their notes here. So they said MVP showed a sizable lead on the competition, which is certainly tied to having the most popular MPO player in the world, Simon Lazat. It's reasonable to speculate MVP would not have been number one if we'd included this section of questions in 2022 survey. But would Discmania be ranked higher if Simon hadn't left?
Probably.
Question.
Yeah.
Two biggest manufacturers, Innova and Discraft, nearly tied. Paul Macbeth's a marquee player on Discraft, yet he had the lower average fandom score than the company. Discraft's highest profile player, FPO, Paige Pierce, also had a lower average fandom score than the company. Other marquee players with lower average fandom score than their sponsors included Katrina Allen, Nicola Castro, and on the other hand, you had Simon Lazat and Kristen Tatar, Calvin Heinberg, Gannon Burr, Isaac Robinson, and Ricky Wysocki, all players with average fandom scores that exceeded their manufacturer's score.
And, you know, the Discraft thing is just completely rigged because Brody and Ezra and the foundation... You know,
I do think they said that at some point down here. But anyways, they didn't say completely rigged. But I think they did point that out.
We skewed it.
No, I do think Discraft, what you see with Discraft, well, Innova, you had Calvin be higher, I believe. But like Discraft with Paul and Paige being lower, I think it speaks to Discraft's brand runs deeper. Because like you have a lot of players who are Brody fans, a lot of players who are Paul fans, a lot of players who are Paige fans, a lot of players who are Missy fans, Adam Hammes, Anthony Barella, Ezra Aderholt. To where, like, you're going to like someone who throws Discraft, pretty much.
Hit him with it.
Like,
it's true.
One of your, even if you hate Paige Pierce,
if you don't like the
might like Missy Gannon.
Well, yeah, so even if you don't like some of the superstars, then you've got, like, sitting, like, underneath, and I don't even say that because, like, these are really good players, too, but then you've got, like, an Aaron Gossage and an Ezra Aderholt, and, like, they have layers to that team.
That's what I'm saying. Like, so I don't... That doesn't surprise me. The Discraft's brand is bigger than a player.
They have done, like, credit to Discraft, ever since getting Paul and kind of riding this wave, they've just done a pretty good job. Like, their marketing has been solid. They've done some interesting things with discs. Like, Discraft is just kind of, they've done a pretty good job with what they've been given.
I wanted to read this last one because I thought the way they worded this was funny. They said, Prodigy and Lone Star had average fandom scores well below all the other manufacturers. What would Prodigy's popularity have looked like before Burr's contract dispute? How about Lone Star before they tried to make everyone and their dog a sponsored player and were still running the immensely popular but confusing Run Ricky Run commercials? We'll never know, but moving forward, we plan on asking these manufacturers questions annually to gain a long-term view of the changing landscape.
That's funny. Thank you for reminding me about Run Ricky Run.
Yeah. The next one was just like the distribution. The only thing that was really notable distribution-wise was MVP. Like, no one was giving them below a 5. DGA, it was similar to, I believe, some of the players where, like, it seems like a lot of people just don't have an opinion on DGA. 46% of people just gave him a 5, which is just like, I'm neutral to DGA. I don't love it or hate it.
Makes sense.
Which is just funny because it's just Discraft plastic at the end of the day.
Yeah, DGA is goated.
And then Prodigy and Lone Star, you both had a lot of people neutral and a lot of people give them zeros. Prodigy was a little bit more evenly distributed than Lone Star, which makes sense why they ended up higher. State slash country manufacturer preference, which is basically like a positive number indicating a manufacturer is more popular with their respondents in these locations. So they like ask about places where it would make sense for stuff to be more popular. So Dynamic obviously was more popular in Kansas than anything else they're about to show. But Dynamic in Kansas was 1.66 popularity. Prodigy in Georgia, 1.27. So people were in Georgia were giving Prodigy better scores. Latitude in Sweden, Discmania in Finland, Lone Star in Texas was a 1. Innova in California was a 0.91. This the interesting one down here. You had so Discraft in Michigan was 0.75. MVP in Michigan, also based in Michigan, was 0.27. Mm-hmm. Whereas MVP in Massachusetts, the Simon Effect, 0.5.
That is interesting.
And then Discmania in Sweden, which is now Discmania's home, negative 0.12.
Wow.
So people were...
They don't like the invasion.
They less liked it. Discmania in Colorado was 0.69, though, and Discmania in Finland was 1.09. So it's still tied to where they came from, basically. And then down here, we have... I believe this is where they go, like, fandom score of, like, players. Or this is, like, some of the political ones of right-wing, left-wing, and then you have...
Bro,
what people think.
What do the left wingers and right wingers throw?
So
that's hilarious.
The most popular, so right wing was way more heavy towards Lone Star, 0.92. And then apolitical was heavier towards
Texas, right?
Yeah. Apolitical was heavier towards Innova. Left wing, the heaviest was towards MVP.
Knew it.
Which is funny.
I knew it.
Trust
I
the science,
knew it for
baby.
Some reason.
Negative 0.68 left wing towards Lone Star.
That's so funny.
So. I was trying to think down here. They also have like your generations, and this is funny because millennials are basically look down on everything but MVP, which is basically they thought of it the same as everyone else. So like
that's funny.
So silent slash boomer generation, they were more heavily positive on Innova, on Prodigy 0.95, Lone Star 1.14. So the silent and the boomer generation loves them some Lone Star. but then they dislike Discmania, Discraft. Well, Discraft they basically were neutral on. MVP they were a little bit like disliking. Gen X basically didn't. They were negative towards Innova, MVP, Discraft, Discmania, and then positive towards Latitude, Dynamic, Prodigy, DGA, Lone Star. Millennials, like I said, they were negative towards basically everything. They just thought everything was less popular than it was. Then Gen Z, this is interesting here. Gen Z back positive towards Innova. So
Let's
you
go.
Have
Gen
silent
it's
boomer,
just me.
Silent boomer, 0.39 positive towards Innova. Then Gen X and Millennial got progressively less liking Innova, and then Gen Z back
it
towards it.
That makes sense though, because like for me, like I'm Gen Z, and I got into disc golf watching Paul Macbeth.
Yeah, I think it. I would have thought Millennials would have gotten into disc golf around Paul Macbeth era more than Gen Z, because remember Gen Z people born in 2013 are still in Gen Z. Like we are the very beginning of Gen Z.
Yeah,
we're definitely.
I was born early 1997, and that's the first year of Gen Z.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
We are the beginning of Gen Z. So we most of our stuff will align more millennial as far as like
it's true.
Ways we were raised.
What's like, the newest gen called?
I don't even know.
Gen Y is that it?
I don't know. I mean, there's X and Z, so that makes sense. Millennials technically be Gen Y?
Maybe.
I don't know because Gen Z is also alpha.
Like, it's probably like Gen TikTok.
Yeah.
Just gin.
I believe there's somewhere in here. Oh, and then here we go. This is the cool one. So where they got their average fandom score based on where they heard about the survey from. So Foundation Disc Golf, you all, were 0.6. You leaned heavier towards Discraft, leaned a little heavier towards Lone Star, leaned heavy towards Prodigy. You're welcome, Will. Leaned heavy towards Dynamic. And MVP even you disliked Latitude was basically we were the most positive group guys
say,
way
yeah,
to go
it's yeah good job guys good we job. Love discs.
We spread positivity minus Latitude sorry we'll do better that
now, what
that
the
next
heck,
year
guys
now disc golf discussion Facebook group they were just negative towards everything Shocker, except for dude. Lone Star Reddit hates Lone Star
I was gonna say Reddit's on there
yeah Reddit hates Lone Star Nick and Matt, they're pretty much positive towards everything. Stat Mando was basically just like neutral, more or less across the board. And Ulti World's people were basically like spot on neutral.
Gen Alpha is from like 20.
So they grouped
10 to 2024.
So they grouped Alpha into Gen Z in this because they said Gen Z slash Alpha.
Okay.
It says many, if not most. Oh, sorry. The respondents who found out about the survey from Foundation gave this craft the largest positive preference gap overall. Makes sense as Foundation started off as a Paul and Beth back company, and Brody Smith maintains part owners, both of whom are Discraft sponsored players. If Foundation had not promoted the survey, Innova would surely have separated itself from Discraft in terms of overall fandom score.
You're welcome, Discraft.
Yeah,
we should be getting something for that.
Yeah, $16,000.
Now this one, they also just asked the straightforward of what is your favorite disc manufacturer. So not how rated 1 to 10. What's your favorite?
I want this.
Innova took it down with 110 vote lead. 663 people said Innova. MVP was second, then Discraft third, then Discmania, then Latitude, then Dynamic, then Castoplast, then Prodigy, then Westside, then ThoughtSpace, Clash, Mint, Infinite, DGA, Lone Star, RPM, Gateway. Connor.
Oh, what up?
Did you take this thing 10 times? Or are there actually 10 different people? Gateway.
There's only 10 people.
10 picked. Well, there's only 3,000 people here. 465 of those 3,000 people said
Gateway is your favorite manufacturer.
Favorite manufacturer, period.
Like, that's a big statement.
Legacy had 6, Millennium had 5, AGL 3, Trash Panda 2, Viking 2, Birdie 1, Elevation 1, Eurodisc 1, Loft 1. These are probably people from the company that are picking these.
Yeah, Elevation, that's got to be the CEO.
Yeah. 465 people said no strong preference. 20 people said couldn't pick one.
Guys, 400 the fact that some there's people only know, just pick one. What the frick?
Just pick one. The fact that some random companies didn't get more just from people like telling jokes.
That's messed up, dude. We would never want people to do that on the survey.
Now, here's the thing. People who said like these people were their favorite players or average fandom score among respondents with their favorite thing. Gannon Burr, people who responded, I'm assuming these are people who picked Gannon as their favorite player. MPO competitors, players and group by their sponsor manufacturer, time survey is taken. Next heat map, different favorite manufacturers. Okay, so people who like Prodigy gave Gannon Burr higher fandom scores.
That makes sense.
I was curious to see if like there was a different tie with Gannon. Because like Isaac Alden, they're all synonymous with whatchamacallit, with Prodigy. So that makes sense.
Whatchamacallit.
Trying to see if there's any weird ones.
So you basically just see the green based on the
map. Well, Presnell was more positive towards people who liked Innova were more positive towards Presnell than people who liked Discraft. Their Discraft like was negative 0.06.
Because they're Presnell like, we tried the drone. It doesn't fly like that.
I love it.
That's not how drones fly.
Joel Freeman, more people who like Dynamic Disc were positive of Joel Freeman than Innova. So.
He has a drone, yeah.
Yeah.
He's the one that throws the drone that's flippy, though.
He does?
I don't know.
You guys never watched this in the bag where he throws that drone and it's flippy like a meteor?
If there was anyone that was going to do that, it'd probably be him.
That's like Presnell's whole thing. It's his only thing. I'm just kidding. That's like one of his his most known disc things is that he throws that drone that flies like a meteor because it's so beat up.
I did not know that.
That's where my joke came from all the Discraft people being like, that's not how a drone flies. I bought a drone and that's not how my drone flies.
Makes sense.
That's where the joke came from.
But being niche in disc golf is cool.
I'm really jealous.
That
you know what else is cool?
What?
Trevor's trivia, fan favorite segment.
What the heck is up, guys? I got a pretty simple game today. Here's how it's going to work. Basically,
you have to say the capital of Argentina.
Yeah. Never going to do geography
again. Buenos Aires. Hold on.
There we go.
Brasilia.
I said to Gabby yesterday, I was telling her about that game that we played. And I said something about the capital of something, and she was like, Buenos Aires. And I was like, come on, Gabby. That's just a Spanish phrase.
That's Argentina.
I'm an idiot. Because I was like, you can't just say a random Spanish phrase that says, like, good morning or whatever, and expect me to believe it's the capital. I Googled it. She was the capital. She got it. She nailed it.
To be fair, it does sound like it could say good morning.
Yeah.
Because Bueno's good.
It's Buenos Dias. You just said, like, oh, Buenos Aires. Because she does that stuff all the time where she just makes up random crap. She was right.
That's funny.
Okay, basically.
Probably means, like, good air.
Yeah. Air in Spanish is Aires.
You guys gonna shut up and listen?
I'm sorry.
I'm under the weather. I basically
technically
got,
everybody's under the weather.
Good point. Unless it's fog, you're in it.
Mm, are you ever really in
fair
fog?
Winds or good airs? Y'all can get wrecked. All right.
I've been wrecked. I'm gonna go ahead and get wrecked.
I've been wrecked.
Basically,
that's the wrecking train.
I've got disc descriptions from our own website. I'm gonna read you the description.
Oh, this should be fun.
I love
disc,
this. Yeah,
but I'm not gonna. Obviously, not gonna.
These are all either written by AI, Nolan, or Brad.
Number one is the glitch.
That's your guess.
I always love giving myself that chance, though.
I'm gonna read it. Whenever you have your guess, blurt it out. But once you say one, that's now the other person's turn. Okay. Like you are gonna go in order after the fact.
I understand you and I respect you.
Okay, only have a few of these. So here's the first one. The blank is a speed 9 driver with plenty of glide and a predictable smooth fade. It flies like an eagle, only faster.
Thunderbird.
Oh, dang it.
Not true.
Okay, but it's so
it's tangling me again? No, you know, it's.
I think we just keep going.
No, I would say it's Connor's turn to guess now, because you said the same thing.
Okay, so it's basically an eagle, but it flies further,
faster. I thought you said
faster, and it's going to be Innova because why else would you compare it to an Innova disc? Well, it's not Innova; it's us.
It's our site. I would agree with your line of thought. So. We won't, if it's not Innova, we'll change that.
I guess I'm just going to say, I'll say Firebird, maybe?
No.
Okay. Because that's the Eagle flight numbers are pretty intense.
I'm going to go away from Innova.
Okay.
Not really many companies make 9-speeds, huh?
No.
I'm going to help you guys out.
Yeah, please.
It's an Innova disc.
Okay.
Just so this doesn't take forever.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Savant.
Correct.
Wow.
Thank you.
I'm impressed that you arrived at that.
Well, yeah. It said smooth finished. I was like, a Thunderbird probably would have been described as a little bit dumper finish.
I didn't think about smooth finish. That's stupid for saying Firebird.
I just went away from Eagle. I don't think a Savant flies like a farther Eagle.
Well, yeah. Nothing Hunt. Yeah.
Interesting choice giving us a hint. I would after say it's just like that, but you know, whatever. I'm just kidding.
All right, here's the next one. And this is a longer one, so remember, if you feel like you know it, just blurt it out. The blank is one of the old school Discraft discs. This is a disc that flies great for all skill levels. Big arms will find the blank to flip up and ride.
Meteor.
While slower arms, no.
Dang it.
Will love the consistent, overstable flight that this disc provides.
Ah.
The blank has a smaller rim that most distance driver, small rim than most distance drivers, but still goes a very long way.
Hit him with a con.
So your key hints there were smaller old school Discraft disc.
True.
Smaller rim than most distance drivers, still goes a very long way. That was basically your key hints there, just to recap.
Hit him with a con.
Smaller rim than most distance drivers, still goes a very long way. So what are old Discraft drivers? So not the Nuke, not the Force. I don't think they describe that as a smaller rim. The Thrasher, but the Thrasher's not old.
It's brand new. Came out like 2017.
And then we don't sell the Avenger. But that would be my guess.
You say that?
Good line of thought.
We
have had Avengers.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Avenger.
Surge.
Correct.
Ooh, I forget about the Surge. Also, that's a lie. Surge just isn't a distance driver to me.
It's an 11 speed.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it to me. It reminds me of a 9 speed.
You're not thinking the right disc.
Yeah, if you hold no a Surge, shot. It's like a Wraith.
And Surge it has like that weird rounded part in the bottom that makes
SS,
you think of
S, honestly, to me, doesn't feel quite as wide, but like a straight up Surge, they're pretty
maybe big. Maybe I'm just thinking about the Surge SS.
The Surge SS always has felt smaller than me.
Yeah.
Okay. 2-0 Hunt. Here we go. The Axiom blank will find its way in anyone's bag. This straight flying mid flies straight even. That's correct.
Nice.
All right, final one. Hunt's already won, but this is just for funsies. I think this will be a fun one. Okay. The Dynamic Discs blank is a reliably overstable fairway driver.
Raider.
Felon.
He's a felon.
Oh, he said fairway driver?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I thought it was funny because like the whole description is like what Hunter hates about it. It's like this disc will become your go-to for all conditions when you're looking for that consistent fade.
Not true. Just not true.
Technically will consistently fade, just not as
they
much.
It might not fade at all.
They're
thrown to a headwind. Will consistently flip over and roll to the right as you cry on the tee box. As you threw into a Kansas headwind, expecting it to fade.
As
good
you
job,
cry
Big
on
Hunt.
The T-box, box yelling, why, Eric, why?
Good job, Hunt.
Thank you.
Good job, Hunt.
We got some off-season moves.
I like that game, Trevor. I like games with discs. That's fine.
Announced last week, Connor O'Reilly has left Latitude 64 and has signed a one-year deal with Lone Star.
Not my Connor.
Lone Star has also announced that AJ and Deanne Carey have also signed one-year extensions. So.
No.
Yeah. Not a huge week for news, but hey.
That was fun.
There's guys, movement. I'm off the ibuprofen right now. There's no time what I'll say.
Dang. All right. Well, the last segment here is In the Bag.
Come on.
And this week's In the Bag. We're going to roll with Connor winning again because some idiot named that rhymes with Connor, but it's not Connor, forgot to post.
Is it rhyme with Connor? Does Silas rhyme with Connor?
That's for you to decide.
So I get to choose the order again.
We're going with materials other than plastics to make disc out of.
Really good one, though.
It is a really good one. I think I'd like to go first because I'd like to go in and take one.
I went middle last time, so can I go last this time? Ooh, I should have asked.
No, because one time I asked where I wanted to go, and you guys said I couldn't have it.
All right, so I'll go Connor, that's Trevor, fair. Hunter.
I fight fire with fire.
I actually wanted to go in the middle, so you just got reverse engineered.
Oh, I just got reversed. Okay, my first one is carbon fiber. Yeah, that's why I want to go
that
first.
That was on everyone's list, yeah.
Yeah.
It just makes a lot of sense.
So. Trev Daddy?
I'm going to go ahead.
Go ahead.
And take rubber.
Yep, that was on my list, too.
I feel like that's the second most obvious.
All right.
Makes sense. Vibram.
It's been done.
Yeah.
And it's, you can make something okay.
I will take.
This is where things are. Now it's going to get crazy. After those first two, it starts to get
all
crazy.
All of mine are pretty
Give
solid.
Give me Damascus Fire. Steel.
Hey, okay. I like it, Hunt. Good answer.
And then also give me. my list really goes downhill. Give me hardened lava because you know you can pour it in molten.
So magma. Or
lava rock. Because you're saying you can
very
mold
brittle.
It really
I was just saying like you could just pour lava into a mold.
Oh yeah, just pour lava in a mold. Not a big deal.
And then it just hardened.
What mold do you think is gonna be able to stand up to lava?
One made out of Damascus steel.
Damascus steel isn't technically a material.
One made out
it's
of
a style of steel.
Diamonds.
You know what?
Well, but
Connor?
Like, but it's harder. It's gonna be harder.
Nope.
Damascus steel isn't harder.
Damascus steel is not harder. It is just steel, but in different layers.
Yeah.
If anything, it's actually
probably less
sometimes
integrity.
More fragile because if you don't get the weld correct,
it holds an edge.
It is stronger and more durable than any of the individual components, which would be steel.
You
Interesting.
Stupid idiot, Connor.
I just learned.
I'm going to take.
I'm taking the word fiber off from Connor as a punishment. I'm just kidding.
I'm going to
carbon.
Carbon.
My next answer is going to be Nerf foam. They made footballs fly really well. Surely they can do
it. But you only
frizz.
Get the foam. You don't get the rubber that the footballs have on them.
No, I had one that was just straight up foam. And like legitimately it was an awesome football. So I believe they could do it with the disc too.
All right.
Connor, you get two?
I get two. My next one is going to be Kevlar. Because it's an extremely light and durable material that is also flexible.
Hit him with it.
Yeah. So and then
that's creative. I like that.
Thank you. Okay, so I have two more. I only get to do one right now, but I'll have another one after this. Do I want to go the funny route? Or do I I'm going to go with adamantium.
That's what Wolverine's claws are made out
yes,
of.
Yes, the strongest and lightest material
See, but I'm on
ever
a,
made.
I am on a similar path, but a better one. Vibranium. That's what Captain America's shield is made out of, and he throws that thing all over the place.
I'm on a better path than both of you idiots. Chocolate.
Dude, how has there not been a chocolate disc for like Christmas?
Chocolate truth. I ate it once.
I hate myself.
Stupid.
I hate myself.
My last one's just going to be leather.
I peeked myself right in the ear.
You just peeked yourself.
That's it.
I'm peeking everywhere.
Trevor?
What'd you take? Leather?
I took leather.
Ooh. I'm going to take.
But the soft touch leather, you know?
I'm going to take bamboo.
What? Not actually that bad.
Yeah, bamboo.
Pretty bad.
Not that bad of a choice.
Pretty bad.
My last one is cast iron. The reasoning be
that'd be heavy.
Yeah, how the heck
make
are you
a green egg
is,
in there.
The reasoning is because you can market it as, have you ever wanted your putt to look like Trevor Stobbs?
Dude.
I'm sorry. I thought of it while I was pooping and I couldn't say no.
That's messed up, dude. No, like, seriously.
Oh, I'm sorry, Trevor.
Speaking of Trevor's putters, you can head over to Twitter and vote for his 2024 putter. And you can head over to my Instagram and vote for my.
What do you want them to vote for Trevor Hunt?
It's they already got rid of the whale. And Trevor didn't put the Banger GT on
round
there.
Round two is going to be over by time.
What was your, like, most fun one? Like,
on
your
bracket.
One? Yeah.
Let me look. Well, I had the Gateway Warlock is still in. The Yeti AVR got eliminated. The I feel like the Clash Candy's
didn't
kind of
Simon
fun.
Called
still
the
in.
Warlock the best putter on the market.
The Yeti AVR and the Whale were probably two of the most meme-y ones, and they both got yoinked. The Millennium Omega.
Your
meme-y like,
chose those?
A lot of the fun ones. What?
Your meme-y chose those ones?
Yes. Right now, what's going on is in round two, the Proxy is beating the Ricoh comfortably. The Candy is destroying the PA2. The Roach is destroying the Warlock. The match that has 2 hours left, 2,500 votes so far on this match, is the P1 and the Blue Bonnet, and they are 50% to 50%.
Wow.
So I want to just let it happen. Like, I tweeted at them yesterday because it was really close and, like, kind of see if anybody would get involved, but I'm just going to let it happen for the next 2 hours. I want to see what the people decide. I don't want to bias it, so.
Mm-hmm. My putter bracket will go live on Instagram. You can vote in my story. I'll just read you all the round one matchups here.
Oh, yeah, I want to hear this.
Round one, you're going to have the PA3 versus the Nomad. And then you'll have the Blue Bonnet versus the Luna. You'll have
you put a Luna in there?
Yeah, well, you have the Roach.
Have fun.
So I put the Luna in.
I'm saying, like, that's going to win.
Probably, but that's okay. Then we have the AVR versus the Challenger. Battle of the Titans there, you know?
That's
right. I wanted to put a Chally SS in because Ezra puts with them, but it didn't.
Then I have the P2 versus the Muse from ThoughtSpace. Then the Judge versus
put a ThoughtSpace in. That's fun.
The Judge versus the Pure.
I forgot we said ThoughtSpace
right.
now.
I could have put one. Then I put the Fudge versus the Dart. Then the
put
Prowler.
It together, fart.
Yeah, when you look at the top right part
I
of my
definitely want the Dart to win, and I will say, you putting the Dart in, that might take it.
Well, since you took the Banger out, I might put the Banger in and adjust my bracket. But
best luck to you.
I have the Prowler versus the Envy, and then the Ricoh versus the Voodoo.
It's really funny because there was like separate
take the
threads.
Prowler out and do the Banger.
There, some guy made an entire thread talking about like predicting my bracket. It is really funny, and like you have this whole group of people. You have three groups of people. One group of people that want me to get the putter I'd be worst with. One that want me to get the putter I'd be best with. They're like, how can you guys not vote for this? Like Trevor putts with. And then you have one group who just wants the funniest possible thing. A lot of people wanted O Whale to win because they said the whale needs to win so Connor could say O Whale every time he misses.
Yeah, I wanted
that would be hilarious.
I wanted it too, and it didn't happen.
I mean, that would have been so toxic.
The voters
dude.
Are crazy.
Every single people would have got sick of that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh well. I mean that kills me.
I could take the Banger. I could take the Luna out and put the Banger in.
If you probably should for your own sake.
I'm fine with putting Lunas.
I'm just saying. Just
good luck
prepared.
Going from PA3s to Lunas, dude. That thing's going
60
long.
I'm playing with Ions right now.
True.
Yeah.
I just always look at you as a PA3.
I want PA3.
Did you not?
Win,
oh, you put the Nomad on.
Okay, Nomad.
So you did put a Gyro. I was scared to put the Gyro.
I put two. I put Nomad and the Envy.
Envy?
Yeah,
that's what I said.
Laughed.
Pop. All right, well, we'll see you next week when we both know what our putters are for 2024.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded, who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do. And start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.